Hi, and welcome back to a new How Did You Make It? The podcast in which we explore each step that has built the career path of various professionals through the discovery of their habits, passions, and interests over the last few decades. I'm Yusra, your host, and today we meet Orla. Do you think that you need to pursue studies which allow you not to feel limited? Do you want to feel empowered to start working harder and wiser towards your goal? And lastly, do you want to understand the power of sports in your life? Then this episode is for you. Orla will inspire you to accept difficulty, to embrace failure and the learning process that comes with it, to determine what resiliency can mean for you, and inspire you to invest in yourself, in your values. So let's learn from her. Hi, Orla, and welcome to the podcast. I'm very happy to have you with us today. I'm looking forward to learn a lot from you. I'll give you the floor to introduce yourself.
Thanks, Yasmir. Look, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm Orla, and I'm based in Dublin, Ireland. I'm married to Dave. We have a cat. He's 7 kilos, Maine Coon. Certainly rules the house. 20 koi fish as well. I might talk a little bit about that later. I would describe myself as still an engineer. I also enjoy being active. So for the past 10 years, it's been weightlifting. The years before that, I was into mountain biking. When I was in school, I played basketball and also did a bit of ballet and music. So I suppose I tried many different things. I'm also passionate about working with my hands. So that looks like being in the garden or renovating, or currently in the middle of what I would describe as a 10-year plan. I simply just enjoy being busy and having things to do. So never a dull moment.
I cannot wait to deep dive into what you just said. But first, can you share with us your definition of success, Orla?
Definition of success. Wow. So I suppose when I think about success, you could think about some successful outcomes. They might be, you know, you've landed a new job. They might be progressing a career. It might be, in my case, building a house or maybe earning money. But actually, I kind of think about things more simply. I often find I've got less control of those long-term pieces. So I tend to focus closer to home. So for me, my definition is simply, did I achieve what I set out to do and what did I learn? And more so, what did I learn about myself in that moment, right? And I apply that to the small things. So that might look like, how did I show up today in work? Did I show up as I intended? Maybe did I get everything out of the gym session this morning that I wanted to achieve? Am I showing up for supporting my family or friends or even looking after myself in the way I want to? So I think those little wins for me are really more important, and then I can focus or let the bigger things just tend to happen. I focus on the little stuff, and for me, I think being focused on success on those little things, it's more rewarding. Otherwise, there's going to be large gaps in your life where you may not feel successful. So that's probably how I think about it.
Learning about yourself, showing up for yourself, showing up for others, and much more. I love this definition. Thank you so much, Orla. Would you say you're driven by values and routine?
Yeah, I'm driven by values. I'm driven by routine. I'm driven by process. So I like to break things down. And so what is it? I have a view of where I want to be or where I want to get to, but I break that down into kind of meaningful pieces. So it means I'm clear on what's important, what I enjoy, how I want to show up. It means I can also be my authentic self, right? A very important word that everyone will maybe reference. But I think you've got to reflect and spend some time thinking about that, thinking about your values. So that's often how that shows up and plays out when you think about what success looks like. Am I being true to me?
You can ask yourself some questions such as, am I being true to myself? Are the actions, activities I'm doing aligned with what I aspire to do and be? Or are you able to do this every day or every month?
Oh, for sure. Like, I think when you focus on the small things, it's much easier to do. Like I said, if it's, you know, looking at the next career, or where do you want to be in 5 years? Or I actually never know the answer to that question. I never have. I don't like that question. And I prefer to think about, what do I enjoy? What am I doing right now? I tend to live in the moment, make decisions in the moment. And that's kind of how it shows up for me. Then you can have more success or more feeling of success. Because I think success is a very inward thing. It's not outwardly focused. It's not based on necessarily always tangible things. You can just be, I had a good day and I was really successful because I was a really nice person. I didn't honk my horn because somebody cut in front of me in the car. Simple things, right?
I love what you mentioned right there. the fact that you don't have an answer to the five-year plan, it puts so much pressure on ourselves and even more on the youngest generation, who has even less visibility on what the future holds for them.
100%. And look, I always admire people that have a very clear plan. I've just never been that type of person. I'm motivated by where I am now and where I want to kind of go more short term. Some people will have that 5-year plan even longer. Great, brilliant, but we're all different, right? So, and I've certainly learned to become more comfortable with that the older I've gotten, for sure. But I did also always think that everybody had themselves figured out when I was younger, and that's not the case. Like, I don't think I have all the answers to myself yet. I certainly didn't when I was in school, but I probably felt that everybody else knows exactly what they want to do and where they want to be. And that's not the case. I think I've learned that the people I see around me constantly, even those who are highly successful, don't always have it figured out. They are constantly experimenting, changing, trying new things. And I think they're, for me, they're the essence of what's incredibly important to focus on when you're in school in particular.
The idea here is to consistently experiment, change, try new things, and take whatever you can learn from those things. Well, can you share a bit more about your early teenage years? What was your favorite subject, your least favorite subject, the activities you were doing, what kind of human you were, what shaped you back then, everything you can share with us today?
What shaped me back then, where I was, it's like, it's certainly an interesting time of life. At times, I don't know if I envy people, and we all go through it, right? I think I was definitely quiet, on the quieter side. Today, the label is introvert. I don't think there was labels when I was in school, but I was definitely, that would be the descriptor. I was studious. I wanted to do well. I wanted to be liked, right? So some of those really core basic things. In subject-wise, I loved maths. Probably my favourite subject. My least favourite was certainly English. So my brain handled figuring things out. Ask me to write an essay about how I feel about what somebody did or did not say in a poem. I just really struggled with that. But it was interesting, and I'm sure we'll touch on it, but I changed schools at one point, and English ended up being my best result. So, you know, I certainly learned that there is, even though things are hard, it doesn't mean that you can't necessarily be successful in them, and you've got to find your ways through it. But I've touched on, obviously, spent a lot of time being active. I've two younger brothers. So we just enjoyed being out and about at that time of our lives. You know, we were playing tennis when Wimbledon was on, or Roland Garros, or cricket when the Ashes were on, or we were running relays when the Olympics, you know, you kind of get it. You're just being a kid, effectively, and just being in that moment. But it was interesting. I was presenting at a conference the end of last year, and someone said to me, you know, what would you do if you were in my shoes? You know, and they're talking about someone who's 25 years younger than me. And I said, my world was very different. You know, I didn't have a mobile phone. I was early into college. Mobile phones then, it was literally to send a message home to tell your mom I might be a little bit late for dinner. You know, it wasn't, you weren't ringing people to arrange meetups. It was just a very different environment. So I think I like the simpleness that my childhood and early school years would be. I can't imagine, because I said I don't have kids. I have nieces and nephews who are that bit younger. But, you know, it's difficult. It is difficult to be a teenager now, from, you know, when I chat to colleagues and who have kids of that age, making those decisions with the amount of pressure that exists. I found the pressure that was in my world hard, but it's very different to what exists today. But I think some of the principles certainly are the same and ring true, right?
And do you remember why you liked math more than English?
I suppose it, how my brain and still today, I'm a problem solver. So the logic of it made sense to me. I had some good teachers. I had some bad teachers. My dad studied maths, so he was highly interested in helping us understand, really understand, not just to be taught a lesson just to learn it, but to truly appreciate and understand maths. So I suppose it was many reasons. You know, I was good. I could think through it. I had someone to help me understand it. I suppose were probably the primary reasons why I enjoyed it. And then when I enjoyed it, I became good at it, right? I think I'm probably the type of person who's not naturally good. You know, some people are just amazing superstars at everything and you look at them. I probably wasn't one of those. I had to work hard to do well and be successful in something. But I liked the challenge of maths. It was logical. I could break things down. I could see the progress. I just found the likes of English much harder to grasp the concepts. But I think as I progressed through school, I started to learn the techniques that helped me in how my brain operates and apply it to English or other subjects similar to that that were less kind of maths or sciencey based. So I found my way through it. But I would still say, you know, reading an English passage and having to ask, you know, and I through exam or through job applications, you often have to do some types of tests. I find them still really hard, right? So they are not my natural strength and I will have to study. I don't enjoy them and I wouldn't do them by choice, I have to say. So I think knowing your strengths, you always lead with them and leverage them. So, I think that's probably why maths for me was always the strongest, or maths and science type subjects.
You have an advice here already, knowing your strength and leading with what you're good at. I liked your mindset at the time as well, Ola, seeing math as a challenge to raise. I do have two questions for you there. What did your dad tell you at the time? Any advice? And the second question is, what would you tell a teenager to start being as interested in math or any other class as you were?
So it's interesting, like I see my niece at the moment not enjoying maths, right? And, you know, I've sought to understand why. And I think like any subject, it can be at times influenced by who's teaching it. It could be influenced internally by, oh, I don't feel so good when I do this because I find it hard and I don't want to put the work in, or I have this story in my head that everybody else is good at it and I'm not. So it's not necessarily the subject per se. It's more, what is it you do or don't like and connect with? And understanding that often helps you. So if it is, for example, a teacher that's, you know, you don't connect with or don't get a good energy from and doesn't help you explain, how else can you find a way to figure out if you're actually good and could enjoy it, right? I think there's many ways to look at it. So I think it's applicable to all subjects. It's not just maths, right? Obviously, that's been my train through my career. And as I said, into being in it, still describing myself as an engineer. But I think when someone is truly good at something, you have invested time, you've understood it, and you are clear on why you enjoy it and what you want to get from it.
I have a story in my head that everyone is good at. X or Y class or whatever activity it is. It's such a common way to think. And it's actually a great reminder. Think about it. The only thing you can control and you can do and should focus on is actually yourself. So those are fantastic points, Ola. And you should ask yourself the following question. So what don't you like and like about that class? What is the blocker that's preventing you from succeeding, from liking it? Is it a teacher who doesn't help you? What can you do about it? And you're such a lucky generation. You have access to more knowledge than ever. So if you're not connecting to the teacher or to your classmates or anyone else, go above and beyond and look for the courses online, the YouTube videos, and anything that can bring you the knowledge somewhere else.
Yeah. I think the first question is to answer, do you want to try to be good at something if you're not naturally? And if you do, then you need to do everything that you can. And I think, again, back to your original question at the start, and how can you be successful in that particular subject or particular topic, right? It's not just anchored to a individual. It's not just anchored to, are you good at the get-go? There's many components to it. But I think starting with, why do you want to do something? And if it's because you enjoy it, and then, you know, you kind of work from there.
If you are indeed willing to become good at something, you need to do everything that you can to make it happen. Well, I do have another question on math. You said you liked the challenge of it. How did you start liking or loving challenging things?
I think at home, even though I've two younger brothers, I was the one who was changing the light bulb, or if the alarm broke, I was fixing it. I think there was always something that I was taking apart and figuring it out. So I think that was just a natural evolution to maths. So it's more the problem solving, figuring something out is why I think I enjoyed maths, why I became good at it, is because I was that type of individual that, you know, and simply like you flick around with a pen in your hands. I was always taking a pen apart and then putting it back together again. So I'm curious to understand how something works. If something is broken, I will seek to see if I can fix it. And that's, I suppose, that skill, without even knowing it as a kid, is what I was doing. And then as I start to explore subjects, that kind of problem solving logic shows up in maths, right? And as opposed to being strong in languages, as an example. So that's where, I suppose, when I think about it, my brain is wired in that way to understand how something works. Why does it work? And be curious. So I will often, you know, walk into a building and think about, why is the layout the way it is? Or you have to do a process of a sign up of a new, you know, product. Why do I have to follow these steps? There's a better way to kind of collect this data, as an example, right? So I'm always questioning and wondering why, is probably more so who I am as an individual. And that started long before maths was a thing, being a teenager, right?
So it's all about being curious and trying to understand your surroundings. And going back to sports here, Ola, how did it shape you?
I liked the energy you feel from being active and fit and running around. I think it was just part of my DNA, having two younger brothers. And as I said, we played every type of sport. Just, well, why not? Just, that's what you do. And that's what my brothers did. And that, therefore, that's what I did. And, you know, I was into more sporty things than I was into, say, reading, as an example. And so it was just what I enjoyed. So I liked following sports teams. We were Man United soccer fans as kids. And as I said, you know, when the Olympics were on, we were all about the Olympics. And, you know, we grew up watching Linford Christie being 100 meter sprinter, or, you know, so many athletes. And I suppose what I learned is I liked the discipline and routine of practicing something and repeating it. So cricket is not necessarily a natural thing to say that we played out on the road, or tennis. But when, as I said, when the sport activity was on, it was popular. But how to learn it to throw a spin ball was fascinating to me, because, well, I don't know how to do it. Show me how I can do it, how you could do it. What does it good look like? And let me keep practicing. Similarly, I was left-handed. So having people show you play tennis who are right-handed, it was, well, how do I serve if I'm doing it the opposite way? So again, I enjoyed that process of figuring something out, understanding how to do it, and then repeat it and become good at it. And I suppose the sport element was, well, it was just what we did as a family, you know, what I did with my brothers. We liked doing it together, and I was good. It wasn't that I had to improve always, but I found it quite natural to try and kick a ball. I found it natural to hit a tennis ball, and I found it natural to pitch and putt, you know, so everything I would have tried, just because it, you know, well, my brothers can do it, therefore I can do it.
Olympians are so inspiring. And if you're looking for role models, I would say look for the TikTok and Instagram accounts of all those athletes who participated in the Paris 2024 and find someone that can bring inspiration to your everyday life. And I love how you were thinking already at that age, Ola, is that if your brothers can do it, therefore you can do it. So keeping this mindset of, there is space for me to reach wherever I want to go. You said you like the discipline of routine, practicing something and repeating it. What place does discipline take in your life? Any advice for our listeners who don't have routines or trying to get to one?
I've learned about myself as I've, you know, reflected. As I said, I am an introvert, so I do think an awful lot. I do reflect on what I enjoy, what I don't, and why. If you asked me as a teenager, you know, do you like the process and the routine? I probably wouldn't have been able to articulate that. I probably wouldn't have been able to describe that for myself. I can look back and say that is. But I think that's why, you know, I did try and experiment or try many things. I wouldn't say I use the word experiment. I just tried many things when I was a kid. Why not? Why shouldn't I? It was, the mentality. As I've gotten older and looked back, I think what I see and spot the repeating things are, I do like discipline, you know, and I've had that even when I say I've lost a job. I would maintain routine and discipline while I'm looking for another job. I would pick up a new sport. I will make sure I get up at the same time in the day. And, you know, I would repeat the same things. So I'm very routine focused. I need to understand who I am and what am I about, you know, and try many things. I think that is the simply what your job is to do as a teenager. There isn't anything else, really.
Calling the ones who practice any kind of sports, the ones who are about to start after listening this episode, it will allow you to learn how capable you are, to learn something brand new and fail and stand up again. You will realize that you can always go above and beyond, you can always progress, and you will develop some kind of self-talk where you will just tell yourself you can make it. And you will connect to the challenges in your life, like all I just said now, you're able to face that challenge and pick yourself up and establish a routine and move forward.
I think as I've experimented, I've learned that I can try something. What's the worst that can happen? I don't like it. I'm not good at it. You can call it failed, but, you know, I've learned through the process. And I think that's probably the fundamental where I've gotten the belief in myself. Right. So that means if somebody asks me to lift a heavy weight, I may not be able to do that today in the gym, but I believe in myself to know that I can incrementally increase my weights to try and get there. May not get there. I may not be successful. I may not succeed, but I will be successful in my attempt to try and get there. Similarly, in something in work, I may not have had a topic been asked of me before. I may not have been asked to kind of solve a particular problem before. Right. But I back myself, and that's the backing of myself, and that belief in myself has come from me trying things. But again, that being able to describe that is, I've only been able to do that as I've gotten older. But I think the root of it is I've focused on what do I enjoy and just keep doing things that I enjoy when I was a teenager into my 20s. And that's formed part of me being able to describe who I am, what's important to me. And it's helped me then make decisions. So you're right. They're there foundations that you are creating of yourself. You're understanding who you are, what you're not. And that's often where confidence for me comes from. It's that belief as opposed to I'm just born with confidence. I was definitely not as a quiet child, as an introvert. But I slowly understood how to have my voice. Where do I have my opinions? What's important to me? And that has kind of helped guide me.
This is incredibly powerful, Ola. Sports has empowered you to believe in yourself. And if you were not confident, you did believe that you were able to learn and try. How would you empower someone who's telling themselves, I wish I could be fearless. I wish I could become fearless. I want to believe in myself as much as Ola does. And I want to start thinking about what you've been sharing so far, which is what's the worst that can happen?
I would simply get you to ask that question. What's the worst thing that can happen? Right? When you look at it, there is not largely, you know, huge things that are going to change your life by trying something. You will figure out, do you like it? Are you good at it? Do you ever want to do it again? You know, I traveled around New Zealand after I finished college and I tried many different things, many of them sports related. Like I decided to jump out of an airplane. Now, if you asked me to do it again, I would say, never would I do that again, right? But I wanted to try it and see. If you asked me to do, so that was a skydive. If you asked me to do a bungee jump, I am never going to do a bungee jump. I know that about myself, that I just had this uncontrollable fear of being upside down, whereas jumping out of a plane, I felt I had more control. Logic doesn't exist. So how I decide, you know, what makes sense to me is going to be completely different for somebody else. But I think that fundamental question of asking yourself, well, what's the worst that can happen? You know, when I ask that to many people, as they're thinking about many decisions, what's the worst thing that could happen? And often you find it's the fear of trying it. But when you break it down and think about it, well, actually, it's not actually rooted on anything. I might be embarrassed. I might fall over. I might make, you know, people might make fun of me. But so what? So what, right? I think you at least try. And I think you're better off trying something than saying, and that's where often there people talk about regrets. You know, do you have regrets? I actually would describe that I don't have regrets in life because I focus on what's right, what's my decision right now. I'll probably make a different decision if you ask me the same question in a year's time, but that's okay, right? There's no right or wrong answer in anything that we're doing. You know, when you think about we haven't got everything figured out and you're fluid in that way, trying something, what's the worst that can happen?
Self-talk is so important. So just keep repeating this sentence to yourself. What's the worst thing that can happen? And keep moving forward. Ola, you did mention that you needed to change school at some point. You might be listening and seeing the same change in your life, or it might be coming to you. So Ola, how did it impact you? Any learnings, takeaways from that experience that you can share with us?
Yeah, so in Ireland, we have two state exams. So one after 3 years, and then the other one is usually after two. But when I finished the first state exam that year, they offered what was called a transition year. So it was a non-curriculum, non-exam year, and I jumped at it. So it was only 30 people in my school out of a couple of hundred who decided to do it. So all my friends went on, and only 30 people that I knew stayed to do this extra year before we started to prepare for the final two-year exam program. And people thought, you know, I was crazy. I was like, well, you know, what's the worst that can happen? It's just another year in school. It's a different type of subjects. I kind of get to explore different subjects. There's less pressure because there's no exams at the end of the year. And it helped me, I think, just have another year to grow up and learn a bit about myself. So when I came out of that, I then joined the year that was behind me as we started to prepare for state exams. So I was with a whole new cohort of individuals who I hadn't gone through the previous years of school with. And I'd learned a bit about myself, right? And I'd learned about, well, some subjects I want to really excel at. I thought about maybe what is it I want to do after school. I thought about engineering. I thought about architecture. And that, I suppose, the pivotal moment for me was I decided actually to leave the school. I'd kind of had enough of just school uniforms, scheduled that you couldn't control. I wanted to be a bit more grown up. So I decided to change schools that had a bit more flexibility for my final year. I was questioned certainly by a number of teachers, you're crazy to make these changes. And I suppose what I found is I just found my voice. I was able to articulate why I wanted to go. I was able to have a clear view of these are the reasons and these are my reasons. And I went and did that. And I think it was the start of me, as I would describe it, as having my voice and learning to kind of think about what's important and making those decisions for myself. Not about, you know, often we look at, well, what are your friends doing? Where are they going? What are other opinions? I started to move away from that. I don't think I was ever very good at doing the same thing that everyone else is doing, I'll be honest. But at that point, I was very clear. I wanted to do what was right for me. So that was a change of school. I had to commute into the city. Busy time because obviously you're preparing for exams. So it was a bit of a risk, but for me, it felt like a calculated risk. Again, when you think about what's the worst could happen, maybe it's not the right decision, but what would it mean? Maybe I could repeat my exams and just spend another year again, but not a big deal, right? I think it was right for me and it did work out for me in the end.
There is so much pressure for everyone to finish school as fast as possible, to not retake a year with some kind of shame that comes with it if you actually retake a year. But we don't know ourselves yet, our aspirations, our goals. So it's absolutely fine to not take the same road as everyone else. Ola, when it comes to your studies, how did you make the decision to study engineering? What was your thought process?
Yeah, like as I mentioned, it was engineering or architecture. So two very different type paths, right? I suppose how I decided on engineering, I looked at, it was a four-year undergraduate program. I looked at the subjects that I'd be studying because you're going to spend 40 hours a week for 4 years. It's a pretty intense course. So you'd want to really, really like a lot of the courses. There were some things on the curriculum. I had to do chemistry, I think, in my first year. I really struggled with chemistry, didn't like it. But out of the majority, I felt, okay, I can get behind it. I'm good at it. If I'm not good, I will get help. And that's what I did. So I think I looked at the subjects. I decided also, my logical brain kicked in. I wanted to go to Trinity College in Dublin. I liked the feel of the centre location in the city centre, old buildings. I just liked the connection that I got to it. But also the real logical was, it was much closer to home. So my commute was, I was able to stay at home, living at home. It was, you know, very costly to move out. So there was logic, but also what do I enjoy and like? And there probably wasn't huge, there was very variations of engineering that I looked at, whether I would study. And actually what I did was I picked Trinity because also they had 2 years of general engineering. So I got to explore civil engineering, mechanical engineering, computer engineering. I got to explore all of them and then I had to make a decision. So I'd got an entry point in, but I had another 2 years to figure out actually what type of engineering. And that's when I specialized in mechanical and manufacturing. And I just helped, I found that helpful. So I wasn't committing to a particular one-off from the get-go, because how do you know at 17, 18, what type of engineer you want to be? But also engineering, I suppose what attracted me to it is it's the type of qualification you could do many things. So I looked at successful people that were around me or in Ireland. A lot of them were engineers. There was engineers and accountants were the two things. And I was like, I can't do accounting. I would just be, you know, just not my thing. Engineering, problem solving. So that's kind of, there was a bit of logic, but a lot of what do I enjoy? Because I said 40 hours a week for 4 years. And actually I stayed on to do a postgrad. So I stayed on to do a PhD. So I spent another 4 years after those. So it was 8 years in total in Trinity. Again, I felt I'm going to be working forever more. And I do feel like that in my 40s, I still work forever more. So what was another 4 years out to just, you know, learn a bit more and explore and have some more life experiences. So that's probably how I decided and kind of made decisions throughout uni as well.
So what would your advice be to someone who does not have an ecosystem presenting what success could potentially mean for them?
Yeah, like I think everyone has to follow their own path. Some people will decide university is not for me. I want to get into doing a trade. I want to be a plumber. I want to be a hairdresser. Others will be, you know, it can be everything and anything. And I think all of that is okay. But I think you need to do it with intent and purpose to figure out and be true to what you want to do. And I want to also say, if you try something and go, I don't like it, there is no problem changing it, right? I would have had many friends and colleagues who, and we are all continually inventing and reinventing ourselves. Like, there's research out there that will talk about the skills that we have today in 5 years' time, only 50% of them are relevant. Now, that time frame can be changing the more AI, as an example, comes in, right? So it kind of sometimes doesn't really matter. It's more about actually what are you doing and how are you understanding about yourself and how are you growing as an individual? That's what's most important. For some people, that's going to take time. For me, I'm definitely slow burner on some of that. I need to mull it over and think through it. Others will have themselves figured out, or others will have highs and lows and kind of constantly change. All of that is okay. But I think you can't be looking at what are others doing, what are your friends doing. I think you need to start to think about what is it you want to do and work through that and be constantly working through that, because we all are. As I said before, we don't have the answers. Nobody really does. We're just figuring it out and trying and experimenting.
Everyone used to experiment is still experimenting and will still experiment. What we invite you to do is to lead with curiosity in looking for opportunities, in looking for whatever works for you, what could interest you. It's starting to explore, to experiment, to find what works. Any advice you remember receiving at the time?
I don't know if there's anything that, you know, stood out on that journey I just probably described, because it's long, right? There's definitely moments of, you know, I would have been used to be very nervous going into exams. My dad used to share with me, you know, don't lose your head when everyone else around you is doing that. I had a difficult moment in university where I actually couldn't write anymore. I had an issue with my hand after a couple of injuries from playing basketball. So I had to be in a room on my own to do my exam. So then I didn't have my dad's advice of looking around those around me, because I was now on my own and I was in my own head. So I had to learn and think about, well, I'm here stuck. What do I do? So it's back to kind of, I suppose my logic helps me to back myself and work through. I often speak with, you know, coaches who help me, managers who help me, and people often describe, or you're actually coaching yourself. So I tend to do that a lot. I tend to ask myself the questions and reflect internally about what those answers might be and mull them over and think about it, right? So it's, there's many, many components to that.
What you just described is self-talk, and it's incredibly important. And for you who are listening to us, if you want to actually have visuals of how self-talk looks like, check out last year's Olympics. Some of the footage of athletes starting to get ready for a run, for a jump, you'll see them talk to themselves. You can jump, you have prepared for this, you can do it, it's just a race. You've prepared for this your whole life, or any kind of sentences, you just have to rewatch it. And looking at this example of Ola's, they have been doing it for years. Some of them have been training for decades, if not more, and they still need this self-talk. And here we should learn from them. We need the self-talk in our day-to-day when something challenging is about to take over or starts.
And I often, you know, I chat to athletes, I connect with them. I spent some time helping the Irish women's rugby team as they were coming together a couple of years ago. So it's fascinating what sports athletes, men and women, have to go through to be the top of their discipline. And they are the tiny, tiny percentage to be where they are. And we all, as mere mortals, can't all be Olympic athletes. But we can learn a lot from that discipline and that routine. And you will often hear them talk about, they don't think about the four-year goal. They think about, again, breaking things down. What are the things they can focus on the here and now? They very much live in that moment. You often hear athletes talking about how to get over a disappointment, how to learn from it, not to ride the highs and not to ride the lows. They're incredibly valuable lessons, right? And they're not coming out of those, they're not creating those lessons. Those lessons haven't been learned over time. Because they're not helpful, they 100% are. They fine-tuned their art. So I think for us, you know, again, mere mortals, to be able to look and see, I'm definitely not, I'd love to have been reborn to be able to be an Olympic athlete. I'd love to have, you know, somewhere had that coach maybe that spotted some opportunity. But what I've been able to do is, well, I may not be that athlete, but I can find my path to be the best me that I can possibly be. And what I back is that I can push, I can, you know, and simply when I'm in the gym, often what I need to do is turn my head off, because my head will go, can't lift this weight, can't do another rep, too tired. All the things that come into your head about, you know, busy life, work is hard, doesn't matter. You turn that brain off, you actually are physically able to do things. So when you stress test yourself, you're physically and mentally able to do an awful lot more than you think. It's just, what's that inner story saying I can't? But if you ask kind of, again, back to the, you know, what's the worst thing that can happen? Or let me just not overthink it. I'm going to try. I had to learn that on the bike an awful lot. I tried to do some downhill races. Again, I wasn't very good, but it meant I was looking at these rock faces, trying to figure out, how am I going to ride down them? And it was literally, turn the brain off. What's the worst can happen? Okay, you could argue bad things could happen. But I am actually capable of doing this. It's actually my brain is telling me. I'm not putting myself in a position of trying to do something that I'm not doing. But, you know, I progressed through that. I learned, I used to build little jumps to help me learn how to jump and get the jumps higher and higher. You know, so again, the kind of practice makes perfect. But I think I find that fascinating, that what's our limiting factor? What is it we're not capable of doing, or what is it we think we're not capable of doing? I think actually we are capable of a lot more than we think. And I think that's across the board at every age, at every stage of our lives. And if you have that at, you know, in your teenage years, wow, you know, how much pressure that can relieve, how much, you know, power that can give you. And you're only at the beginning of this journey. And, you know, who knows what it could be? Maybe you could be the next Olympic athlete. Maybe you could be an astronaut in space. Anything is actually possible. But I think if you lead with that excitement and possibility, wow, like, you know, sky's the limit, really.
You are capable of much more than you think. And the sky is the limit. And this translates perfectly to your studies. You have to put the work in to understand a concept in any class, and that you will master that class and then you will ace the exam. And there is no doubt that you will manage any upcoming exam and challenge within those classes. And it will take a lot of work. And think about it. The athletes are putting so much work into preparing for a game. So try to put as much work as possible to prepare for an exam.
Yeah. Yeah. And also I think, look, exams while you're preparing for them, and it's easy for me to say, you know, many, many years later, but they're not the end of the world, right? The pressure that we do put on ourselves. So, yeah, me looking back, it would be, look, just continue to be you. You know, you're okay as you are. I would also kind of, you know, say not everybody has it all figured out, you know. And I think they're important things to remind ourselves on. But, you know, by not trying, I think that's the worst thing that you could do. As you, especially at, you know, teenage years, there's no commitments, there's no restriction. Well, there's some restrictions in life, but there's not, you know, restrictions that as you become older and have families or whatever. And I think it's a perfect time to experiment and try and see what you like, see what you don't like. And again, what's the worst that can happen?
Trying to know yourself, trying to understand yourself, trying to identify what drives you, and to more or less quote Ola, is it problem solving? Is it following an engineer path? We almost wrapped up on your high school teenage years. I just want to chat a bit more about it to understand how were your grades? How did you manage to go to Trinity? Were you a brilliant student in high school to make it to this degree?
So I wouldn't describe I was a brilliant student in, you know, teenage years or even into college or even into postgrad or even now. I don't think I'm naturally the type who was brilliant right from the get-go. I think so. Certainly as I went through school and the same as I went through the 4 years of engineering, I got better each time. I got better as the years went on. So my best results were in my finals in college. But that was based on failures along the way. No, I didn't fail an exam. I got some low grades that just on the tip of I nearly failed, but I didn't. I think that was always my goal, not to have to spend my summer repeating an exam. Not the worst thing that happened, but I just felt I would like that. That's what I'm aiming is not if I'm not good at a particular subject, my minimum standard I'm setting myself is just pass it. Just get through it so I don't have to do this again in the summer and I use my summer holidays. But what I was then able to do was, okay, I've learned a bit more. Some of my subjects changed as I went from second year into third year. So some of them started again for third year, fourth year in engineering. But I was constantly fine tuning. How do I attend 40 hours? How do I manage tutorials, labs? What is my kind of my process through that? Learning more as I went. How do I learn faster? How do I regurgitate, repeat, remember, understand, because it is very intense, right? And there's many courses that are very intense that you have to learn a lot and prepare for exams. So no, absolutely, I improved as I went along. I was not a student from the beginning.
You don't need to be brilliant. You need to be ready to go to the next level and work towards it. And if you think that you're not good enough, still go for it. You never know what can happen and what the worst can happen, right? Well, what's your recommendation here? Would you recommend students to just apply and check if the path could be a fit, focusing on passing, not necessarily excelling? Would it be focusing on discovering what they like the most, what are the interests, instead of getting the best grades?
Well, it's what worked for me when I wasn't good at something. I wasn't, as in, it didn't naturally click. Chemistry was definitely an example of that, right? I didn't understand it, didn't like it. It just, I probably had a negative story that I was telling myself about it, because it's not, in theory, it's not hard, right? And I was doing many subjects that would be on at the same, let's say, level as it. But so that was my way through it. I'm not saying that that's everyone just now needs to go and focus on passing as a bare minimum. I think that would be a shame. But that was my technique to handle where I had subjects that I wasn't naturally strong at, right? I think what you've got to do is figure out and understand how the system works, which is you've got tutorials, you've got probably lab work, and you've got assignments, and all of it equates to your final end year result. Usually, that's kind of how it works. There might be slight differences in different courses, different universities, different subjects. By and large, you need to understand what is expected of you to get through this course, to get the grades that you want, right? I think we all intend to go and pick a course to get through it. We don't go in to fail it. I think that's just a waste of time. So I think most people, their intent is to get through this, to get a good result. So then you need to figure out, what does that mean? So what is it? Where do you need to pay attention? So for example, if in engineering they had to get us to write essays, which thankfully they didn't, I knew I was going to be, that was going to be a hard one, right? But in engineering we didn't. But I said there was subjects like chemistry, which I didn't get. So I had to find my way. So I think you will, as you think through maybe what course you want to go for, you're thinking about the subjects you will study, where are you going to be good at? I think it's unrealistic to say everybody is good at everything. We're just human, right? People might around you think, oh, I have this figured out. It's easy. The course is easy. And you're thinking, going home every evening going, this is not easy. This is really hard. It doesn't matter what other people think. It doesn't matter. I think you need to pay attention to the story you're telling yourself and why. Maybe the story is, well, you know, I don't like it. Well, have you actually put some time and effort into it? Maybe you need to adjust your study guide and say, okay, the amount of hours you're spending on this particular subject. Maybe you need to think about how I scored at the end of the year. Maybe it's assessments actually where I can pick up some of my points as an example. So I think it's just to figure out the system that you're within, and then what are your techniques? You can't just go along and it'll all be fine. You also can't just look at everybody else and do what they're doing. You are an individual. You are unique. You have your own strengths. And you need to figure out what's your plan to get through it and be successful. And again, that's back to the little steps of, you know, did I get through this week? Did I get the extra hours I wanted to in chemistry, in my example? What is your goal? What are you trying to achieve and succeed in? And how are you actually doing that? I think they're the important questions to ask yourself. Are you setting yourself up for success? Or are you just sitting back and going, I'm not good at this. That's it. Fine. And to be fair, I would have had friends in college who did that. And what happened? They probably usually failed those subjects. They then had to spend the summer, and they were bright people, right? So they weren't capable. They just didn't put the effort in, and they had to spend their summer. And that was my non-negotiable. This is a tough course, many hours. I don't want to keep doing this all summer. I want the summer off and just do something fun. So that's how I made sure it worked out the way I wanted it to work out.
I could not agree more. Focus on your learning. Focus on your learning strategy and find your own way. Try different options, test them, and see what works for you. And it might be different from the one class to another. And it might be different from the person that's sitting next to you, even if it's your closest friend or the person you've known your whole life. You are unique. So don't expect that the approach that the person who has been sitting next to you and going through all those years together, can work for you. You have to find your own way. You have to identify your own learning process. Find what works for you and stay consistent. Stay consistent in your approach. Goes back to the sport approach, you know, of repeating consistently to become better. And thank you, Ola, again for the great reminder. And yes, it is unrealistic to say that everybody is great at everything. You can only do the best you can. But, do pay attention to the story you tell yourself. As Ola rightfully said, when you say, I don't like it, I'm not good at it, try to understand why. Is it the teaching style of the person who's been teaching you your English class or any other class? Is it your lack of understanding? Don't stop there. Try to understand why are you telling this to yourself? Ola, during your studies, did you have any inspiring teachers? Someone who impacted you somehow?
I think I was probably in awe of all professors and lecturers in university. I thought it was fascinating that they could spend often decades in their field, had a passion to, well, I would say mostly had a passion to educate others, and there was still so much more that their areas could be researched in. I thought researching, you know, and that kind of discipline was fascinating, that we don't know everything and things can advance. And so I probably held them in high regard, all professors. And I didn't necessarily have a plan to stay on and do a postgrad. When I finished my finals, I went to Chicago for the summer on a J1, worked in a coffee shop selling coffee. I never drank coffee, and I'm sure I made the worst coffee in the world. But it was great fun. There was about, you know, gang of us living in a house, you know, typical, what you do, Irish going to the summer for the States. I came back, thought about, oh, I have to write a CV. I don't really want to write a CV. Went in to see my professor of my final year project, and he said, would you consider staying on to do master's or a PhD? And I was like, that's not a bad thing. And I think I liked the fact that he asked. And I think that rings true in my career even now. When someone says, actually, I think you could be good at helping me solve this, I like that. I like that my ability to do something is seen by others. I get satisfaction and reward from that. And so I decided, yeah, sure, why not? Now I'll be working forevermore. I was given a student's stipend, so I got some money, eventually got a scholarship, and I thought this was great, to be able to do that. So I think all lecturers I felt held in high regard, and then particularly my supervisor from final year into my postgrad.
And would you have signed up for postgrad without your supervisor's guidance suggestion there?
Probably not. No, I don't think it was something on my mind. I don't know if we were, you know, doing our final year, if it was something that was talked to us about enough. There was obviously postgrads who were around us. They did tutorials with the undergrads. They were in the labs. They were, you know, so we were around them, but it was never, I wasn't sure what needed to be done to be, to study, to do a PhD or a master's. I probably didn't fully understand the difference between being taught masters and research masters. But no, I don't think I would have thought about it. I probably would have gone off and have to write a horrible CV, you know, and I didn't have I didn't do work experience during college the way a lot of people would, you know, go for internships. During college summer holidays I went to Chicago to work in an internet cafe. I worked in Germany one summer to making beds. They are not skills necessarily that you would say big consulting houses would, or engineering companies would go, it's a great person who's done an internship somewhere. And, you know, so I often find it fascinating when people in college talk about internships that, you know, I worked in the bookshop, local bookshop, when I finished my state exams. You know, it was very basic. It wasn't about what am I building for my CV. I didn't know how to write a CV when I finished college, really. So no, I think I wouldn't have pursued that unless I'd got in that day. I had it in my mind, I don't really want to write a CV. And then when he suggested, what do you think about it? And I said, why not? I think I kind of really decided on the spot, or I came home and told my parents, and I was like, I think I'm going to go and do postgrad.
If you can identify a trusted advisor or someone who can slightly guide you when you're not sure where to go next, do reach out to them. And it can be a teacher, the friend of a friend, someone slightly older, or someone who graduated from your program. And right before that, try to understand what you like, what you dislike, so that the person can get you best. Ola, you said that you still consider yourself as an engineer. Is that a state of mind or way of thinking?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. State of mind by thinking. There's not many words I connect to. I would use that more often than anything else. Introvert is a difficult word. I use it typically because it helps other people as opposed to helping me. So I think people, when they hear that word, they can go, oh, actually somebody can be successful or can lead. So at one point I led 150 people in my career, right? So you can be an introvert and be a successful leader in large company. So that label I use to help others, it's not necessarily a helpful label for me. I think the only other label I would use is engineer. It's just a word that I enjoy, I connect to. And it's interesting, my husband he's also an engineer, but we talk about kind of computer science world and software engineers, and I feel very differently about it. I think the problem solving of what I did in engineering and college has stood to me through every career. And I've had many industries, many different companies, and it's just breaking a problem down into pieces and how to put things back together. That is the essence of who I was as a kid, based on what I studied in school through college, and just who I am as an individual. So when you think about the beginning of how I am as a kid and how I am now, it doesn't matter the path between it. What's common is I solve problems. I break things down and I figure it out. And that's just me. That's the essence of me as a person. And it'll come across in everything that I do, whether it is in the gym, whether I'm out in the garden and I'm, renovating, or I'm building a concrete or block wall, or I'm laying concrete. It's all logic through kind of, I enjoy that. I get great satisfaction from figuring something out and being able to do it. And it could be the simplest things of seeing smooth concrete. To me, it's just fascinating that I've had to get all the levels right. I've had to figure out what the mix. And obviously, I'm not doing it all on my own. I'm doing it with my husband. But, and I find that then you look back at the weekend and go, well, that's great. And you go into work the next day and people ask, well, how was your weekend? And I'm thinking, how do I just tell people that I, lifted 5 bags of cement and made concrete and got joy out of seeing it nice and smooth at the end of the day. But I've gotten very comfortable with who I am, what's important to me. And it just then becomes, it shines through in everything that you do, right? And then it just makes your decisions, your life. It's just, you're just being you, you're being your authentic self. And there's no other way to be.
Could not agree more. Thank you, Ola. So let's deep dive into your career path. So you started as an engineer and then you move into a consultant role in finance. Can you tell us about both?
So when I finally then came out of college, so after 8 years, I was like, I better use this engineering and try something. I knew I would never just always stay in engineering. So that was never a thing that I felt I had to always do. I knew I would try it and that there would be many fields. I felt I was not limited. And that was part of the route, the choice of engineering and also mechanical engineering. But there I went off and tried it. I was making diamonds that are on cutting tools called synthetic diamonds. Not the shiny, nice diamonds that you see on engagement rings. This is the type of diamond that looks like a grain of sand on your fingernails. That was a hard job. I was the only female engineer. It's an environment where it's a plant, it's a factory. You've hard hat, safety boots. You don't see daylight. There's no windows. And you're working with operators who've been there for 40 plus years. I am the young engineer who's coming in to run experiments and ask me to do things different and differently. And it was fascinating for me to build relationships with people. And actually I did that as I shared, people ask, what did you do for the weekend? I was at a bike race, or I was on the bike, or I was traveling over to the UK. And you just start to make connections with people. So I started to make connections really quickly with people by just being myself. And just knowing that I was being really a pain in people's behind, because I was maybe increasing their process time, by 2x. And they just didn't like having to do that. And I get it, right? So it was hard. I had some hard moments. I'm always grateful for the first boss that I had in there, because it's the lesson I always share with people. And he introduced me to a summer intern and said, this is Orla, she's relatively new, you can learn from her mistakes.
Oh, so how do you manage those kind of situations?
So I started to learn, again, as an individual, how to handle difficult moments, how to speak up.
what was my voice, how to handle where I felt if people had misunderstood me, hadn't read me correctly. And I think it was highly empowering, but while really difficult, you know, and again, I know I always use it as my example, but it helped me understand and again question, oh, someone's made a statement about me. It's actually true and I need to go off and think about it. But then it helped me think about how do I actually deal with this difficult moment? Because look, life is hard. You're always going to have difficult moments. You're going to have difficult people. You're going to have people who misread you, misunderstand you. And I think, again, back to the more that you understand yourself, the easier it is to actually, well, do you know what? Thanks for that call out, but I think you've gotten me wrong and here are my reasons why. Here is my original intent in what I said or what I did or whatever the situation is. So I learned to, again, for my voice to kind of come through. To your question of why change, well, it was a difficult time in manufacturing in Ireland. The plant actually was going through strike action. So, you know, I felt, look, there's many places I could be working. Do I want to work in somewhere that, you know, is going to be difficult, continue to be difficult in hard moments? So I just said, look, time is now to move on. I think I'm probably driven a lot by when I get bored, I make changes. I probably got bored a little bit there too. And so I decided and I moved into kind of financial world. So completely different industry. Did question whether it was the right thing for my CV. You know, I've only been a short period of time. But look, I've jumped a couple of times to different industries and many different companies. It's always an interesting talking point when I talk to people about, you know, next role. They're often curious to wonder why. But I think I've got a story that I'm interested in. Why not? Why? Like, I'm not bound to a particular industry. And actually, I found strength from being able to demonstrate that I can work in many industries as opposed to I'm only in one place. And I think that is a unique skill that I can bring versus others who may not have to reinvent themselves many times.
You underlined something so, so important, which was understanding yourself allows you to speak out. So, Erla, for the people who are listening to us and who are still looking for their voice, how do you proceed to find it? Did you have a mentor? What did you learn from him or her?
I did have a mentor. So that example I talked about, I brought that up to the MD of the company and I did have a mentor, as all new engineers into the company did. It helped. I think it helped to talk the situation out. But what I quickly learned was not much is going to change. So it's great to have somebody to talk it out. And I suppose it's where I've learned that the culture of where you work and the environment that you work is incredibly important. And that stems back to, can you be your authentic self as well? So they're kind of my two non-negotiables when I'm looking for somewhere is, can I be my authentic self? And, you know, what is the environment, the culture of somewhere that you will work? I need it to bring out the best in me. I need it to bring out the best in others. So, yes, it's great to have mentors, but if somewhere isn't necessarily right, it'll never change, no matter how many mentors you have. I think what you do, mentors help you to get clear on you as opposed to necessarily anything else. So that was kind of how I approached it. But yeah, I did. I've always had support systems around me. Sometimes they've made a difference, sometimes not. But I think it's always back to backing myself and figuring my way through it.
Thank you. And what advice would you give someone who's trying to change sectors and facing challenges, pushbacks from hiring team, not understanding those changes?
So I suppose I've tried to make sure that my jumps, so my changes or my changes of role are not so spiky, let's say, right? That they appear, oh, it looks like after 6 months, off she went again. Another 6 months, off she went again. So I when I read CVs as I hire, and have hired over the last few years, there can always be a story behind something, but I think you want to see progression. You want to see a bit of longevity. Maybe it's promotion within a company. Maybe it's different titles. Maybe it's different experiences, different initiatives you've worked on. So you want to see depth of experience. So that's one thing I would have made sure, and I still would do, that I don't look, you know, if situations arise that there is a short hop, that's fine. But so typically I would try and not make that not the case. And I think then I
I've been clear as I described those who don't know me, the reasons why. Why was I leaving, right? So was I seeking bigger scope? Was I, you know, role had plateaued, there was no promotion, was going to take, you know, long time. And they're part of my stories, right? In reasons why I've left, or I was looking for, you know, just different problems to solve. And I could do the same things again and again, but I just wanted a new challenge. So I think because I've made those decisions intentionally, purposely, I'm able to tell that story. But it is fascinating. I would say 99% of the time there is very curiosity about, well, you've worked in many places, many different industries. Why is that the case? So I think that is probably more so on the unusual side versus, I think people change roles a lot. I am, through my career, I haven't become, and sometimes that can be difficult, I'm not a subject matter expert on one thing, right? I can solve many problems, but it means I'm seeking to understand what problems an employer is looking to solve. And therefore, ooh, that sounds interesting. Haven't done that before. I could do that, right? But you then have to convince somebody who doesn't know you. And obviously, the more senior you get, you rely on networks and introductions and people vouching for you to say, well, actually, Orla would be a great person to do this. She may not have done exactly that, but she will figure that out and get that right for you. So, you know, But I'm in a different stage in career. So I think it's back to, you know, I watch not having jumps very quickly, not to say that you can't, but I think having intentional steps and having a clear reason why you left somewhere and why you joined another company or the different stages of your career, I think are important because you will be asked forevermore, not on every step, but to be able to articulate how you've made those decisions, right? Which means you need to understand yourself, back as what we described. So it's no different than picking a subject, picking a university course or a path after school, whatever that may be. You need to be clear on why it is. Otherwise, you won't stick with it. And then you won't be able to tell people why you've made that choice and where you want to get to. And I think as you go through further in your career, you need to rely on that voice more so than mentors or people helping you, managers and coaches. They are there to facilitate a role, but actually they're driven by what are you asking for. So you might say, I want to get more experience. I want to become a people manager. Okay, well, that's going to take some time. So how do we get you some exposure to helping people, to kind of, you know, mentoring others? So you kind of, you work towards it, but you've got to be able to have that voice of what you want. Similarly, what subject you want, why do you want it, what course do you want to do? Being clear on the why, I think, is important.
So can you tell us about your own next jump in big tech? How did your success look like there?
So it was interesting. Like I didn't necessarily intend to jump out of, so I jumped out of engineering into the financial world. I didn't intend to jump straight away into the tech world, but I was made redundant and I was interviewing and I stayed focusing on the financial sector. But this is back in 2008, the financial crisis in Ireland. So I've gone from, you know, manufacturing that wasn't great, then into banking finance that wasn't great. And I was saying, okay, I don't really want to jump again, but here I am. So I did apply for many roles in finance, didn't get them. I think people also didn't understand what I could bring. And then came across Google. And I remember I had bought myself, because I was into the biking, I bought myself a little dirt jump bike to learn how to bunny hop. And I remember telling friends that I was learning and they were, you know, asking how are the interviews going. And I said, oh, I had one great one. It was Google. There's no way I'm going to get Googled up. And I did. And it was a magical time. I think just even getting the job, the confidence boost that it released in me, from the day you go in, you do feel, you know, just part of this group, very smart people. I was definitely not the top bar, but, you know, I think you always, for me, I always seek to be surrounded by more senior and much smarter people. I think you can learn an awful lot. And Google was definitely that for me. I was still, you know, still very new in my career, you know, hadn't had a lot of structure from a career perspective. So I found it fascinating. And yeah, it evolved to be many different things. I think the opportunities arose, which was really helpful.
I had probably my, when I look back, I probably didn't push myself to progress my career quick and fast enough, but that was my lesson to learn over those 8 years. I did have progression, but again, I think I probably could have done it quicker and sooner. So yeah, tech was not necessarily by choice. It's where I ended up, but really enjoyed the environment, the culture, the atmosphere. I think the timing of it was just right for me and where it was. So certainly a fascinating time. And I, you know, I learned a lot again about myself. You know, when you surround yourself by very smart people, it's always interesting to see where your tipping point is.
The way you share this part of your life, Ola, is very inspiring. You put your interests first, learning a new skill for one of your passions. So my question here is, do you have any advice for anyone who tends to go all in for job hunting, for getting themselves and their interests along the way?
So I've had two redundancy moments in my career so far, and I'll say so far because it can always happen again, unfortunately, right? And I've probably kept them very simple. I've just done me. And I think it was interesting, often people ask you, oh, what course did you do? Did you travel? Where did you go? And I'm like, I didn't travel anywhere. I didn't do any course. I think the other one I got asked was like, did you bake clothes? And I'm like, no. And I was just, you know, so the first time, as I described, got the bike and was learning to bunny hop. So that was about 6 months. Similarly, this more recent time was about 5 and a bit months when I knew I had a job, you know, halfway maybe through that. But I kept things very simple. I think it's a stressful time figuring out whether you have employment or not to figure out your next role. It takes time. Certainly for me, it does. You're trying to assess a company, you're trying to assess a role, you're trying to assess the individuals you're going to work with. And all of that takes time, energy. Sometimes you may get it right, sometimes you may not. But I think, you know, no career is static. People come and go in organizations. You make the decision based on the information that you have, which is, you know, when you interview, it's quite a short, limited amount of time. And then I backed myself to figure out, again, a new industry and new sector, new company. And it's not rocket science, I suppose, is the story I tell myself. Right. And I suppose I feel there's probably very few jobs that I couldn't do. I have a brother who's a doctor. Okay, I definitely can't do that. I 100% know that's the case. But everything else, I think, is probably potentially fair game. So let me at least try it is kind of, again, my mentality with new jobs. But to kind of the gap moments, yeah, I've kept it simple. Keep my routine, keep doing what I enjoy and like, which is always been something active. And then, you know, you do some part of the day, head down, finding your role, thinking about next, what's going on, where are you going, who are you meeting? But I remember I was given advice a couple of years ago, I should be meeting 4 people a week, or the 4 people. You need to talk to 4 new people a week. I was like, why 4? Just random people, just make sure you have 4. Everyone's like, I can't do that. It was a few weeks that I talked to people. I was just like, I can't talk to people anymore. I just need a break. Or, you know, I'd meet somebody through a referral, through somebody else. And I remember driving home one of those occasions going, how did I get here? That was a useless conversation, like useless. So you go back to actually, you know, why am I meeting someone? What can they potentially unlock from me? So rather than getting carried away with the phase or fad of, are you traveling? Are you doing loads? Or even take a year out, you know, no, my intention is to keep working and to work again quickly because actually I would like to retire at a reasonable age and just not get lost in the process of what people are telling me and figure out, actually, you know, 4 is just nonsense. I can't do 4 people. You know, it's hard work trying to find something new. Whatever number I come up with, it's not going to be a predefined number. It's going to be based on what's right. You know, so again, it's back to me doing me, figuring out my way through it. I've done that through the jobs and in the non-job moment, right? When there is a gap.
This is inspiring. You stood up for yourself and said that was not working for you. Would you say that it's your way to practice resiliency somehow during those difficult times when you're facing redundancy, for example?
Yeah. I think backing myself, being resilient, you know, figuring things out. I'm always at my best when I do things in the way that leverage my best, as opposed to I get wound up and this is what I should be doing or this is what everybody else is doing. None of that actually matters, because if I try and do the other way, it's just not going to work, right? So it's getting clear again on me and doing it my way. Now, that's not to say, look, I'm going to be rogue and, you know, go crazy, but it's being true to myself and finding my path through it. It takes me 6 months, 7 months, 10 months to find a new job. Well, that's just the way it is. If it's, you know, I'm in a job trying to figure out the next one, whatever amount of time it is, it is okay, whatever number of interviews. Similarly, if I, you know, had decided to change courses, equally that was okay. So I think our decisions are unique to us in those moments in time.
And do you have any advice for the one who wants to go into tech and have no idea where to start? They don't know what the required skills are.
I listened to a fascinating talk last week in work where we had a career week, and it was a woman from the US. She came in to talk about all the different technologies that exist. And she's like, well, you're never going to figure them all out. You're never going to know them all. You just need to figure out maybe what are the ones that are important to you. But what she did talk about is actually how do you get focus time on yourself, and how do you be creative? And I think that's a fascinating way to think about the future, is to balance. We are always on, right? So the stats she shared is about between every 6 and 11 minutes, we're being distracted by something in our life, and it's usually technology, right? And when you do get distracted, it takes you 23 minutes to get back into the activity that you're actually doing. So think about that, right? And there's a stat out there that says approximately 2,600 times in a day you're going to get distracted. And when you get distracted, it's almost like you get this endorphin rush, and it's like you're seeking this kind of next thing. So we have a really bad habit in society now of being constantly busy, constantly always on. And I think that is going to become harder, no matter what career you're in, what sector, what industry. So it's how do you get clear on, again, how do you want to show up, right? And the only example that this individual shared last week is, say, for example, you want to use an AI tool to help you manage your calendar. Depending on what AI tool you use, AI tools are built, as we know, on, you know, they're trained and they learn, and they're built on a methodology that the builder wants you to have. So it might be large focus blocks of time. Another AI provider on your calendar might be actually give you loads of breaks between meetings. What one is you, right? Versus what the AI developer has decided this is what they want to build, right? So I think unless we have the risk of losing our true identity and our true selves just because it's next tool, next thing, right? So it's, again, for me, I think no matter what industry you are in, skills need to constantly be fine-tuned and evolved, irregardless of sector, irregardless of if we're in this AI world or not. We should be doing that and always doing that. That doesn't mean we need to be, you know, absolutely obsessive about what course are you learning? What are you doing? I think you can equally evolve yourself, you know, as what I've described today. It's not based on, I would call it active learning, right? I'm reflecting on life experiences. And I think being acutely tuned into how you are as an individual, how do you feel in a particular moment? Why did you react the way you reacted? What do you enjoy? What do you want to do more or less of? That's not based on an AI tool or a particular skill, right? And I think having that true sense will help you determine, maybe it is the tech industry. What will the tech industry look like in 5 years' time? Who knows? What will any industry or sector look like? Who knows, right? So they're all unknowns that you can't control, versus what you can control is, who are you? What do you enjoy as an individual? Where are you good at? And what you need to be good at will constantly change and evolve. But you need to have that appetite and that willingness. It was interesting. I was at a couple of weeks ago, a cloud summit. It was actually in Google, a Google AI summit, actually. And there was a panel, and there was university lecturers on the panel.
as well as industry experts, and they were asked about what skills will be needed into the future. And it's not what we all thought in the audience, technology, tech skills. It's actually being able to handle change and ambiguity.
So what you will need in the go forward is, shit's going to change. Shit's going to happen. World's not great. Something is, life is hard.
It's being able to live through those moments is actually what's going to stand to you. And we saw a lot of that through the likes of COVID, right? Difficult moment, difficult time in society. So many examples where, you know, like nieces and nephews who were born during that time and seeing the differences in how they interact in the world, right? But I think it's being able to handle those skills of change, ambiguity, is what will see you through no matter what happens in life.
So seize opportunities for you to constantly have to adapt, to raise a new challenge, to embrace ambiguity and move towards the skills that the job market, that our environment is asking from us. Going back to sports now, Ola, can you tell us a little bit more about your involvement in Parkit?
Yeah, so I'm a couple of years into being on the board of Parkit. So Parkit is a not-for-profit organization where it brings resistance training to local parks. So we have 7 locations around Dublin. So these are free. And the idea is the World Health Organization not only recommends cardiovascular activity, but also weight training activity. And it's been hugely important for people as they grow old to maintain muscle mass. And there's so many known implications by the improvements it can have. So the idea with Parkit is to remove some of those barriers. So financial barriers is one, as an example. So there is it's community based. It's in a local park, which means you just sign up to attend. And there's instructors that lead the session. So I think it, as I started to think about, you know, what I enjoy, what I like, I was like, okay, there's a definite trend of fitness being active and technology, right? And how technology advances our lives or improves our lives. And both of those statements are very broad, but it meant I, you know, as I looked at kind of, well, what else could I get involved in? Not necessarily something that I'm paid to do. How can I, you know, help others? Was kind of my motivator. And it's where I landed on with Parkit, and I was fortunate then to be selected onto the board. So look, it's, you know, it's still very early days in terms of 7 locations. It's got an aspiration, and a lot of viewers, listeners may have heard of Park Run, which is similar in that there are 5K runs that are actually many locations around the world. So the idea is to try and build that. How do you develop the business case to be able to scale it and grow it? How do you make sure that you maintain the culture, the connection, the importance of the weight training element? So yeah, it's just, I suppose, in a way to give back, to help, you know, to develop the business model and see where it can potentially go.
Can I just give you the floor to try to convince anyone who's listening to us who has never practiced any sport or doesn't have a routine or doesn't think about making it a priority? Well, what should they know?
Well, I nearly seek to be understanding someone's reason for not doing any type of fitness activity, right? I would seek to understand, why is there no activity in your life? Because look, there's so much research out there. You know, it's the connection with nature, it's the physical improvements in our lives, in the well-being, it's connecting with other people, the social side of things. There's so many ways that sports, you know, connect, playing on the team, development, and, you know, like from kids at such a young age to be active and into sports and music and arts. I think all of that is incredibly important. It's always frustrating that as people become, you know, that bit older into teenage years, especially girls, lose that connection and are not encouraged to continue that. I wish I was probably encouraged to continue to play more. I had a gap in that when I was in college years, I didn't play any sport. I would have gone to the gym to train, but I wouldn't have played any sport. And I think that was a miss. So I think it would be seeking to understand why people don't want to invest in being active of any type. And then just seeing with them, you know, there's got to be something that they could benefit in their lives from. I think just the satisfaction the return on investment is just so important. And, you know, we spend so much of our lives indoors, working, studying. There's much more to life than in just that, right? So for me, being active in sport plays a huge part of it. And I know I'm not even doing it justice in how I'm describing it. There's a lot more experts out there that will tell you all the reasons why you should be active.
Hopefully you are as inspired as I am. So start somewhere, wherever you can, whenever you can. Daily, weekly, monthly, stay consistent. We're almost reaching the end of the episode. So Ola, let's deep dive into your current role now. Can you tell us about your role, the people you're managing, and everything that's around your responsibilities?
So I'm with Flutter Entertainment, which is a company, parent company of some of the largest skating and betting brands across the globe. And I've been with them since January of last year. So actually, I'm not leading people. So where I previously was in leading 150 people, I'm now not leading. I'm leading myself and I. That's not to say I'm not working with people across the board, right? So I don't work in isolation by any stretch. And I'm actually enjoying the change. I'm actually enjoying change of industry, change of role. And I'm focusing on how we can build a collaborative marketing strategy across the brands that run in what's called a federated model. So each of our brands are like individual companies, their own P&Ls, their own CEOs. But we've got similar problems and challenges across the marketing space. So obviously what my background in the likes of Google and Meta has helped me kind of think about some of these spaces and kind of common problems. So again, back to common problems, breaking things down, figuring out what we want to do and put it back together again. And I'm part of it is the journey that you're bringing people through. I really enjoy that, right? So where is the concept we want to get to? Where is the future's end state? What could this be? How do we push beyond where we are today? I find those things fascinating. Again, back to evolving, changing. Where are we going next? What could it be? And how do you then bring people through it? We may be successful, we may not. Some of these problems may not be things that we end up solving, but what I enjoy is the process of going through that, you know, a very methodical process of what is it we want to do? Can we do it? And were we successful? And even successful outcomes can be actually we figured out we don't need to do this because we've learned a lot through it and we've determined this is where we don't need to get to. But you've answered that question. So culture is constant within that, but it's constantly evolving, which I like, right? It's changing, always new, meeting many different people from many different walks of life, which I really enjoy as well. Collaborating with very different backgrounds, diverse perspectives, people who, you know, don't look and feel like me, because I think that's really important. I will have a perspective, but others will have something different they can bring to the table. And I really like that intersection of different opinions.
So we're almost reaching the end of the episode. I do have a question, which is out of curiosity. Do you know what made an individual contributor you managed or a manager you managed successful? What did they have specific habits, traits, something that we can learn from?
I think those that have been successful have led with curiosity, have sought to understand what is their area of responsibility. Often people get very distracted by, ooh, I want the next shiny thing. Can I have that over there, please? Whereas actually what you need to do is show impact through what is your job? What are you being asked to do? Then you get license to say, ooh, that thing over there, I've demonstrated what I'm doing is great. I'm on target. I've got it under control, .. Now can I have something else in next? So not being, I suppose, impatient and get your area of responsibility really nailed. Your job, what is expected of you, to be very clear. And then being, I suppose, curious to where I always enjoy working with those who go, okay, I can see where you want me to go. I can see where you want us to get to. Actually, have you thought about this is what the possibilities are? So even push the boundaries and be, rather than coming with, don't like that, that's a problem, actually coming with, that's really exciting and here's how I would build on it. So sometimes it can be the language you use, the terminology you use, but often it can be the mindset of that positive
reinforcement, how to kind of evolve what we're doing, as opposed to don't like it, don't want to be it, but not helping to figure out a way, right? I think especially as you lead people, you want people to be pushing you, but you equally want them to be doing it in the right way, I suppose.
Lead with curiosity and push the boundaries. Thank you, Ola. So we are reaching the last question. So what's your last advice looking back? I know you shared a lot, but what is your last advice?
Look, I think it's kind of what we've touched on throughout the talk, where, you know, get clear on yourself and invest the time in understanding yourself. Go easy on yourself. I think nobody has anything right or wrong all of the time. We're trying to be curious and figure it out, look to experiment. Decisions you make now will, not be life ending. They will not, you can always course correct something as your careers will always evolve. You will always evolve as an individual. So I think it's more just experiment and see, this is the time now to try. I also think you can experiment throughout your career. And I talk to individuals about that a lot. You don't need to change a company. You don't need to change a role to experiment. You can experiment where you are. But I think if you start with that mindset, it makes things a lot easier, right? It opens a lot more doors than closes them.
Thank you, Ola. Thank you for everything you shared with us today. If you're listening till now, hopefully you're as inspired as I am. Thank you, Ola.
Pleasure. Thank you.